Session number 10674, Real One.
Mr. Alder, Real One. When was it that you joined HMS Exeter, please?
On the 25th of August, 1939.
How did it come about?
The Exeter had returned from the South Atlantic and half her crew were on leave when she was put on war service. That meant to say that extra men and officers were drafted to the ship at short notice to make up the complement for war, and she sailed that day in the afternoon, so I only had a few hours notice to join the ship.
Did you tell me that that's called a pierhead jump?
Yes.
What is a pierhead jump then?
A pierhead jump, as I have described, is when you are detailed to join a ship at hours or very short notice.
What kind of a ship was she to serve on?
I thought the Exeter was an excellent ship. She was, although she was a bit, with her tall mast, a bit top heavy, but I've been in the county class cruisers, which were also very tall mast, which were much worse as to sailing.
Was she a comfortable ship to be on?
Yes. I considered yes.
How did the officers treat you in those?
Very good. All the officers I had contact with were excellent officers as far as I was concerned.
Was the captain popular?
The captain was very popular, Captain Bell. And the torpedo officers that I had contact with were also very popular officers.
What was your job on board ship?
I was number one of the port torpedo cube, torpedo tubes crew. My duty on going to action station was to open various valves on the torpedoes that were necessary and also to set a depth on the torpedo which you require the torpedo to run at below the surface. After completion this duty, it was my responsibility then to report to the officer of the quarters in charge of both torpedo crews. And the ship was engaged on the port side, and as I went over to make my report, an 11-inch shell fell just short and on contact with the water exploded. The shrapnel then, majority of the shrapnel, was then thrown inboard. It killed the number one of the port tubes crew and injured all the crew and injured the torpedo gunner, Jerry Lynn, and myself.
How were you injured?
I received shrapnel in my legs and some of it in my upper face and upper body. That was by virtue of the fact that the shrapnel was coming over the tube and under the tube.
So this is the actual battle of the River Plate.
This is actually in action. The action started about 6:30 p.m.
If I can just go back a bit, can you tell me what rank you held aboard the Exeter?
I was a petty officer leading torpedo man. Petty officer leading torpedo man, or in the Navy, LTO.
How many men did you have under you?
There isn't a question of men. On the tube's crew, there was four in the tube's crew. As The fact was that the torpedoes could be fired electrically from the bridge, but if electricity failed, there was one man on each torpedo tube that could pull a lever to fire the charge for the torpedo to be fired out of the tube.
Were most of the men whom you had working for you hostilities only, or...?
No, by no means. There's very few of the men that were HOs, very few. The majority, when you're talking about hostilities only, you're talking about men that have joined by virtue of being told to enter one of the services. But the majority of the men on Exeter were all long service serving men and officers of the Navy.
Can you remember the period of hunting for the Graf Spee? What it was like?
We were not hunting for the Graf Spee, actually. When we left Plymouth, we went into Freetown and then dashed across the South Atlantic to pick up the South Atlantic station again, the South American station. Halfway across, war was declared. September the 23rd, I think is the correct date. And we then went into Rio. We were at war, but that country was a neutral country, so we were then limited to a stay of only 24 hours. We then proceeded south to the mouth of the River Plate, where we patrolled the mouth of the River Plate, also doing convoys duties for ships leaving the Plate till they got clear into the South Atlantic.
Can you remember any incidents from that time?
There were not very many incidents during the patrolling time. We did go get bumped about a bit when we would be alongside an oiler replenishing or restocking. But about the 12th of December, no, before that, we sailed right south, almost to South Georgia, as it was coming up for the anniversary of the Battle of the Falkland and Coronel Islands. And it was thought that the Graf Spee could come around, approach from South Georgia, and bombard Port Stanley. So we were there in the event of anything of that occurrence. Not that we would have been much against her as we were in the actual Battle of the River Plate, because, as you know, she had 11-inch guns, and we were the larger cruiser with 8-inch. The Ajax and the Achilles only had 6-inch guns. Otherwise than that, one could say it was just a monotonous duty of patrol. We did make visits to Montevideo for a 24-hour spell, and then we did go to the Falkland Islands, Port Stanley, for a week's recuperation and rest. Then, after the battle, of course, we made our way again back to Port Stanley, where they had to cope with an enormous amount of wounded.
What kind of reception did you get when you visited Montevideo?
Montevideo was very friendly indeed. In fact, in my story, I wrote a rather charming story about my visit to Montevideo.
Can you tell me?
I could, yes. My friend, who was unfortunately killed, was a petty officer cook. Do I say his name?
Yes.
Frank Legg. During their visits in peacetime, he had made an acquaintance of a retired director of the railways. Most of South African, most South American states, their state railways and some of their other state state-run businesses and etc. were all by Englishmen, and this gentleman was a retired director from the state railways. He had a very beautiful, what we might term, hacienda. This he let during the summer months for a fabulous sum, which enabled him and his wife to live in luxury in a first class hotel and still go laughing to the bank. And my friend Frank rang this gentleman and he said, do come out and have dinner with us at this hotel. And we went out, and it was a very magnificent place. And in the lounge where we were having a drink, there was a very imposing staircase. And down this staircase came a very regal-looking lady in all, if it was the Queen, you would have thought, well, that is, isn't she marvellous? And this was his wife. And that lady, I have never forgotten that lady, her charm and the manner that she came down the stairs. And he greeted her by kissing her. Frank kissed her hand, and I did likewise after I was introduced. And the remarkable thing about that dinner, which was par excellence, that they served the red wine of the country, and they were in mammoth wine glasses, mammoth wine glasses, so that I at least struggled with one, but this gentleman and his wife consumed about four or more afterwards. And they served beautiful liqueurs, I forget what it was at the time, and then she retired and we spent them. And that story, is that lady is always reminding my memory. I've seen that woman coming down the most imposing staircase and this lady coming down. Isn't that a rather nice story?
Yes, but you didn't come across any German immigrants.
No, I did not. I don't think I met any German immigrants in Montevideo.
Let's go on to the Battle of the River Plate, and can you tell me first of all again about what your action station was?
Number one of the port torpedo tube crew, and my duties was to open certain valves, which are always closed, a water valve and an air valve, and set a depth on the torpedo. And you've done that, and there were Mark 7 enriched air torpedoes. They were classed by themselves, these enriched air, because a torpedo is run on, has a compressed air bottle which is filled up, and a fuel bottle which is usually shale and water. And when it all goes to the, mixes all up into one, that causes the driving power.
What's your first memory of the Battle of the River Plate?
The Exeter was the first to sight this ship on the horizon, and the Graf Spee had been looking for her supply ship, and also being near the mouth of the plate, she thought she might find and destroy some merchant vessels leaving the plate. And the French vessel, the Formose, was leaving at the time, And this foremost was more or less a bait in the trap, because the Graff's Bay closed on there. Incidentally, before she was identified as the Graff's Bay, she was thought to be her sister ship, the Admiral Scheer. And when the Exeter sighted her, she made the signal, enemy in sight. She hoisted her battle ensigns and then closed. By this time, the Graff's Bay had realised that she was up against a British naval cruiser. It was the policy of the Graff's Bay never to be caught in a naval action, so she could continue her raiding of the shipping lines. And she relied on her speed, so that anything that looked a bit dangerous, she could turn around and run. But on this occasion, seeing the Exeter, it may have crossed Captain Lansdowne's mind that this was easy meat and he could pick the Exeter off very comfortably with his 11-inch guns against her 8-inch. But then, of course, the Ajax and the Achilles appeared, and that was a different picture.
How much of this were you aware of when you were called to action stations?
We were aware. There are several stories with reference to the position, say, of the Graff's Bay at various times. Some have it that she was reported oiling off of Pernambuco on the 12th of December, and that's how we were supposed to be looking for her. But in September, I believe, she was there and sunk two merchant ships and then went back into the South Atlantic towards South Africa. And then she made her way again to cross. Actually, as I've stated before, she was looking for her supply ship. But it is thought that one story or the other, obviously not true, that she was either in the South Atlantic still, and that this story about she was oiling off of Pernambuco, I don't think stands up to. It's never been investigated at all.
When you were called to action stations, did you realise it was the real thing, or did you think it might just be a training
exercise? No, I'm afraid we realised it was the real thing, because we closed up at action stations about 3:45 to wait for dawn. We usually each morning. And then when dawn came, for about an hour, we left again. But about half an hour afterward, so 5:15, I suppose. Yes, it would be 5:15, it would be 4:45, and it would be about an hour. So it would be 5:45. We fell out, but about half an hour later, we were back at action stations, because she had been sighted, and the action actually started at 6:30 a.m. in the morning.
So it was the fact that you were called out so soon after dawn action stations.
We knew there must be something really this time that we were going to have to fight against. I thought so at the time.
How did you go to action stations?
From our mess decks, we were obviously went down there for breakfast, so we were all in our mess decks, and naturally when the action stations were sounded or through the loud hailers, we all at the double. Usually action stations at the double met. This was the real thing, you see.
So you just ran as fast as you could?
Yes, to get to your action stations.
Was it orderly, going to action station?
Quite orderly, oh yes. There was no panic about this thing.
What did you feel like? Did you have butterflies in your stomach?
No, not at the time. But afterwards I did. When I saw some of these things hitting. And of course when the ship was hit by 11-inch shell, she literally shuddered, didn't she? Because after all, what was it? 670 pounds worth of snap? I think it was. I've got it in my story, all the weights of shells and everything.
So once you got to your action station, what happened next?
Well, I did my duty of preparing the torpedoes in the tubes and then reporting to the torpedo officer in charge of the torpedo tubes.
How long did it take you to prepare them?
That would only take about 5-6 minutes to do the three torpedo tubes. You did them naturally as quickly as possible. It was only just a question on the torpedo tube of lifting a cap, putting a spanner in, turning them. You knew when the valve was opened by virtue of the fact that it would not turn them all up, and put your cap back on. And there was about three of them to be done.
Did you do it yourself or supervise somebody else?
I do it myself. That's the duty of the number one of the tube's crew. That is a responsible job, to see that those torpedoes, because when the torpedoes leave the torpedo tubes, the propellers, in other words, the engine is already running. So you see the propellers, and it is the duty of the couple of the chaps on the outer tubes to get to the side and report.
So you must have done it thousands of times before, had you, in practice?
We have done it at practice, not thousands of times, but we have done it naturally at practice. But there was no fear of the engine being started, even by opening those valves, but because the air, when it's open, it's stopped by a lever, which when the torpedo leaves the tube, the lever, which is like that, is thrown back, and that allows the whole of the air and all the rest of the ignition, etc., to fire, to start off the propellers or to get the torpedo running.
So once you'd got the torpedoes ready and reported it, did you just have a long period of waiting then?
No. I didn't know. You did have a long period of waiting, but unfortunately I got knocked out, didn't I? But I realised that my legs wasn't too bad, and as the casualties were there of the port tube, I went to find what was more or less a Red Cross party. There are parties, you see, that deal with these casualties, brought stretchers and all this, you see. A first aid party.
So after you'd reported that the torpedoes were ready, how soon after that did the shell from the German ship come in?
Just a matter of crossing the ship from the port side to the starboard side, just walking across, and there the shell, that 11-inch shell, which was fell short, but as you, on impact with the water, naturally, other shells have what they call a delayed fuse, and one of these 11-inch shells entered the petty officer's mess, passed through, and didn't explode until it reached a inner flat where there was a first class party, a first aid party, and a repair party. And shells, when they travel through the air, become almost white hot. They get extremely hot, so that the explosion and the heat caused by that shell melted the overhead wires, which were covered with lead casing. So some of the men had a share of molten metal on them, and my best friend, he was one of them. He died in a stretcher next to me. I was eventually, when I got back again, I collapsed, and a sick berth chief petty officer then was going round and giving us injection of morphia. And then I was eventually, I was laid in a stretcher. And after the action, we were all distributed, the wounded, into various officers. I was in the captain's cabin in the wardroom in the sick berth, where Royal Marine bandsmen were looked after us.
When you were first hit, what did it feel like? Could you feel any pain?
No, I didn't. Not really. I didn't realise you were hit. Didn't realise I was hit. Only when I put my hands down and my trousers was whole, and you know, and you blood on your hands. You thought, oh my goodness me, where does that come from?
What was your reaction when you found that? Was it one of fear?
Yes, I was. Yes, I was then. That was the first time, really, that sort of butterflies in my stomach, or and your mouth goes dry. You feel, oh dear, now what's happened? I've been... And the torpedo officer then came down from the bridge, and he fired the torpedo tubes and told me to get back. There was a screen, a canvas screen put up there, and he said, you get there behind the screen, stay there. And he fired the torpedo tubes because you have from the bridge a what they call a deflection, which you, in other words, you, the tubes themselves can be with a handle moved around in some direction, so that instead of firing the torpedo tubes directly at right angles to the ship, you can angle them to fire perhaps ahead of the ship you're going to, or perhaps that way, hoping the ship will meet that torpedo when it's coming up to it.
How soon after you were hit did you start to feel pain?
About half an hour later. It wasn't immediate pain at all. In fact, I didn't realise I was hit because I went forward to get a first aid party to deal with the casualties of the starboard tubes crew. And then when I came back and I put down, and of course I was bleeding, I realised. So that although the pieces of shrapnel, they are hot when they go in, so they cauterize the wound, and you don't, it's not quite so painful when it cauterizes.